Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms.
Hey
And welcome back to part one of Throttle Up for this week. And part one, of course, is our continuing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. And this week, I want to cover two things. The first thing is the continuation of what we talked about or what we began to discuss last week, which is this whole thing surrounding fake news, fake stories, planted information that that is actually not truthful, cannot be supported with, with things like facts, objective truth, reality, and stuff like that. Okay, so, and I do think that's fairly important. But the first thing is that I want to talk a little bit about Spygate. And my impression, my understanding of it, how I think about it, how I try to bring in this whole notion of, in this whole methodology, which we call critical thinking. How do I do that in my way that is productive in the way that I can make sense out of the world. I can make sense out of things that are happening in the world, in my understanding of it, and particularly in my sphere of influence. All right, so let's talk a little bit about that. And I know this is all over the news, and this is, of course, the hot button item for the not only for the immediate future, but certainly for the foreseeable future. It's pretty incredible what has been or had been going on out of public view, and I would say that it's disturbing to say the least. It is unbelievably anti-American of what has or what had been going on. So Spygate, here's the way I have organized it in my way of thinking, and I've kind of put this down on paper. So Spygate now, it's pretty clear that it consists of the following entities, if you will. Certainly the FBI was a major player in Spygate, Department of Justice also, State Department, pretty good evidence that the State Department was involved. The CIA now, apparently, from recent revelations, the CIA has now been implicated as a major player in this. And, of course, the Department of National Intelligence, the DNI, also, amazingly, the DOD is implicated because of the spy that was brought in to spy on the Trump campaign was paid. His services were being paid through an office that is located in the Department of Defense. Also, the Obama White House was clearly involved in some form or fashion. So we have all of these agencies. They are converging or they are coordinating their efforts to do what? And I would say that their efforts could be defined as follows: to prevent the candidacy or the election of Donald Trump as president. So they were conspiring to prevent the election. Once he was elected, they continued to conspire to somehow nullify the election. Now, I'm not sure how they expected to do it, but it's pretty clear to me that that's what they wanted to do. And so that is disturbing beyond belief. I don't actually know how to take all of this stuff or what to make of it in in my way of thinking, because this seems to me to be unprecedented in modern times, and it may very well be unprecedented in the history of America. And so as, you know, as you and I, as average Americans, we need to take this very, very seriously, and we need to think very seriously about what this means and what we should do about it as thinking and voting Americans. And we'll get into that further as we go on in our, you know, in our radio show for the summer and the fall. We'll continue to talk about that in various ways. All right, so that is my take, rather painful to discuss it. But that's my take right now on Spygate. There is some new stuff that's coming out. I have uncovered some additional information that we'll pass on in future programs. Probably, I would say, next week we'll have a pretty good handle on some new information that is now just being revealed, apparently, by some whistleblowers. New stuff is coming out almost on a daily basis. And we'll try to pass that on and discuss it with you on future programs. Okay. Now, the other part of critical thinking, part one, I wanted to cover, which is a continuing discussion of what we did last week in terms of looking at how these nefarious forces that we would call stems from what we would call the extreme left. Also, we could say that this stems from the world of socialism and the world of collectivism, which is trying to convince us of something that fundamentally is not true. Now, what's the response to that, or what's the to counter to that, or what are the counter tactics or the countermeasures to that, which is we are being confronted by something that fundamentally is not true, but various nefarious forces want us to believe something that is fundamentally not true. And the antidote, of course, is critical thinking. The countermeasure is critical thinking. And critical thinking is going to win out if we use it. If we don't buy into these efforts to convince us of something that is not true, if we don't buy into that, we are going to be able to persevere, and we're going to be able to win. We're going to be able to win on this battlefield of ideas, this battlefield of the mind of the society. We're going to and what we're going to do is we're going to use critical thinking across the board and in every aspect, particularly as we are confronted with information that we may not be aware of. Somebody is trying to convince us of something. We're going to be able to look at it, or we should be able to look at it critically to determine if it is something I want to consider, or do I reject it because it doesn't pass the critical thinking test. Now, that brings up a really good point, which is, what is the critical thinking test? Now, we have talked about that in various ways on ever since we started Throttle Up some years ago. And I guess my commitment to my listeners is that I'll try to get that critical thinking test underway. I'll try to identify exactly what are the steps for this critical thinking test in future programs. But today I wanted to continue this discussion by using something that I came across, rather fantastic full-page advertisement, if you will, ad or some not even sure it's an ad, but I guess it is. It was a full-page ad by Facebook, right? Now, obviously, Facebook is being faced with some serious criticisms by Congress. There were congressional hearings recently. And so in response to some a growing concern and unease within the general population, they have come up with this this full page ad, and it the title of it is "Together We Can Fight False News." And I wanted to cover some of this stuff because, first of all, I think it's appropriate that they have done so, but I wanted to look at it from a critical thinking standpoint to give you at least my take on it, and to see how best we can use some of these ideas to evaluate what we see and hear that is coming to us from some media outlet. Now, the subtitle of this full page piece by Facebook is that we are taking action to remove fake accounts and working with fact checkers. You can learn what to trust with our tips to spot false news. And they have 10 tips here. And so I'll briefly discuss these because I think they're important. And I think this is a way that we can get on top of this situation and not be stuck in the quagmire of confusion. Number one is to be skeptical of headlines. Now, as I go through this, a lot of this stuff is common sense, but we'll cover it. All right, this is not something that I would write, but nevertheless, it's out there, and so I will give it a fair review. The first thing is, like I said, is be skeptical of headlines, and I would sure. I would second that. That certainly is a great idea, and I would say across the board, be skeptical of everything that you hear and see, because it may be a setup. So they go on to say that false news stories often have catchy headlines in all caps with exclamation points if shocking claims in the headlines sound unbelievable, they probably are. Okay, that's fine. I have mentioned that also on this show before, and I think that's good advice, not a problem. And I applaud them for saying that. Item two on their list is to look closely at the link. They go on to say that a phony or look-alike link may be a warning sign of false news. They say that many false news sites mimic authentic news sources. Okay, sure. Take a close look. Don't just assume that what you see is accurate, but again, be skeptical of where it's actually coming from. Item three on their list is to investigate the source. All right. Ensure that the story is written by a source that you trust with a reputation for accuracy. Good advice, but I guess what I would say is where can you find that today? There are a few sources out there that I think are trustworthy, but I would my opinion is that I would be skeptical of most news outlets because I'm not sure that they are. All right, item number four is watch for unusual formatting. Many false news sites have misspelling or awkward layouts. Read carefully if you see these signs. Okay, that's fair enough. Item five is to consider the photos. False news stories often contain manipulated images or videos. Sometimes the photo, they say, may be authentic, but taken out of context. Good advice. Item six is inspect the dates. False news stories may contain timelines that make no sense. Fair enough. Now, item seven is the big one. Okay, this is the kicker. Item seven, check the evidence. Check, they say, the author's sources to confirm that they are accurate. Lack of evidence or reliance on unnamed experts may indicate a false news story. In other words, anonymous sources. If you see if you're reading a news source, an article or whatever, or watching it, and they are relying on anonymous sources, you can put that in a separate category, which is that I don't know enough about this, or you can put it in the fake news category and say that, okay, well, I'm not even going to entertain this proposition or this position or assertion from this particular author or group of authors or this particular network because I can't verify the veracity of it and I'm not going to believe it. And they're going to have to do a lot better job than this to convince me that something like this is true. Now, you can see where I'm going with this because a lot of stuff has come out over the last year and a half concerning President Donald Trump that is simply not true. And more we begin to see that these fake news stories are pretty easy to spot. And that's where critical thinking comes in. So critical thinking and being skeptical goes hand in hand, and we have to be able to confirm the assertion or the proposition. If we can't confirm the assertion or the proposition, then we simply are not going to believe it, however nice it sounds or however convenient it sounds or however authoritarian it sounds. We are simply not going to believe it. Item number eight on their list is to look at other reports. If no other news sources is reporting the same story, it may indicate that the story is false. Fair enough. Item number nine on this Facebook ad is the story a joke? Sometimes false news stories can be hard to distinguish from human humor or satire. All right, sure. And finally, item number 10 on the list. Some stories are intentionally false. It says here to, and I'm quoting, think critically about the stories you read. All right, think critically about the stories you read. And so that supports what we're trying to do on this show, is all about critical thinking. And of course, in your lives, I'm certain that you have already adopted critical thinking as part of the way that you go about doing your business and conducting your lives. And if you are still new to this field of critical thinking, then further investigation is appropriate. And there's lots of ways to do that. We have access to some great sources, not only this show on our website, but really all over the place. There's lots and lots of books and videos and support and some courses that you can take. And we'll get into that later in some future programs. I'm doing some work with some organizations that deal with critical thinking, and so there's some certificate level courses that you might be interested in, and I'll pass them along as we go forward in the show in the weeks and months ahead. Okay, so that is what I wanted to talk about in terms of critical thinking. Now, we're going to be moving on to part two. Part two is going to be a discussion of it's our storyboard. In part two, we're going to be talking about some aspects of socialism, and it's really a continuation of some of the things that we began talking about last week. And then part three, I think, is going to be also a rather fascinating discussion. So that is the completion of part one for this week. And now let us press on to part two. And welcome back to part two of Throttle Up for this week. Part two, of course, is our storyboard. And today it is a story of Venezuela and the tragedy of socialism. Rather disturbing turn of events. And for those of you who have followed this story of Venezuela and the recent re-election of their president, Maduro is his name. I'm sure that you're as disturbed about this situation, this human tragedy, growing human tragedy, which is now the failed state of Venezuela. And it's disturbing, of course. So this appears in one of my major one of my favorite sources for interesting news in the Wall Street Journal. And this is the weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal, May 26th and 27th, recently. Actually, it was last week. All right, so the title of the story in their review section is The Tragedy of Venezuela. And the reporter, the writer of this, is Anatoly Kermanev. I may not be producing that correctly, but anyway, he's a Russian. Now, he starts this article basically saying, you know, he talks about this the sham election that has occurred in Venezuela recently, and how tragic everything has happened to this population. He says that when he arrived in Venezuela in 2013, the party was still on. Oil was fetching about $100 a barrel, and the president's populist government was showering petrodollars on everyone. But then something happened, and what happened was the complete collapse of the economy due to the implementation of what I call extreme socialism, or the implementation of heavy socialism. You could also call this Marxism, communism. It doesn't make any difference. It's about the same thing. He goes on to say that there were worrisome signs even back then. Inflation and debt were rising fast, and despite spending splurge, the economy was only growing at a minuscule rate. Shortages were getting worse, and fewer people made or grew anything, preferring instead to make money playing the exchange rate arbitrage. This is created by the government's insane currency controls. So the alarming economic indicators were equivalent to a neighbor complaining about the noise, but nobody paid any attention. He goes on to say that by sheer greed and incompetence, a ruling party hiding beneath the veneer of socialist ideas was producing a catastrophe. He goes on to say that when he grew up in provincial Russia in the 1990s, he lived through the collapse of a superpower and witnessed the corruption, violence, and degradation that followed. And so he is beginning to see this repeated in Venezuela in modern times. And he goes on to say that what struck him upon arriving was how little the socialist leaders cared about even the appearance of equality. So they were living a life of luxury and everybody else was getting free handouts as long as that was possible, but the economy and the people's lives were deteriorating rapidly. He goes on to say that Venezuela's economy last year, well, he says that by the end of 2018, it will have shrunk by an estimated 35% since 2013, the steepest contraction in the country's 200-year history and the deepest recession anywhere in the world in decades. From 2014 to 2017, Venezuelan poverty rate rose from 48% to 87%, according to a survey by the country's top universities. Some 9 out of 10 Venezuelans don't earn enough to meet basic needs. Children die from malnutrition and medicine shortages. An estimated 3 million Venezuelans, 10% of the population, have left the country in 2 decades of socialist rule. Almost half of them in the past 2 years, according to a researcher. Today, the streets of a coastal town that hosted the central bank party recently are largely empty, like those in the rest of Venezuela. The speed of the collapse has transformed the lives of millions of Venezuelans almost overnight. When the author met a social worker in the port city of LaGuardia shortly after arriving, she had recently bought an apartment, had plastic surgery, and taken a cruise ship to visit her parents' native Colombia. She soon bought her first car. Her ticket out of one of Caracas's worst slums had been joining the ruling Socialist Party and becoming a key party activist in her town, organizing women's cooperatives. Her new lifestyle had been made possible by subsidies, loans, and preferential exchange rates. Today, she is struggling to feed her family 3 meals a day. Her car is rusting away because of lack of spare parts. The seaside restaurant where I used to meet her to discuss politics is closed. The currency and price controls implemented by Cesar Chavez broke the basic link between supply and demand, creating surreal economic distortions. All right, he goes on to lay out a rather dire and disturbing and extremely difficult piece to read because of the human tragedy. It is a human rights abuse of gargantuan proportions. Nevertheless, the people in power are not going to give up. They are going to consolidate their power, and they're going to continue with these failed socialist policies. But at some point, it's going to stop. I don't know when it's going to stop. But, you know, I guess we could look at this while we are disturbed about the human suffering, and we should be. And I don't know exactly know what can be done about it, because I'm not even sure that the government is going to allow aid to come in. But and there may be some religious organizations that are able to do that, and certainly we can all look at that and see if we can contribute or help in some way. But additionally, what I'd like to do is to consider this, you know, this path of inevitable destruction, which is called the path of socialism, and the tragedy of socialism. And I guess the ultimate tragedy in my mind is not that socialism fails. The ultimate tragedy is that more and more people are not recognizing that it is a failed idea. And how many failures have to be racked up by this, you know, by this ridiculous system before it's completely rejected by the people that occupy planet Earth? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know when it's going to end. We're still struggling, not you and me, but a lot of people are struggling with this idea that socialism and Marxism, neo-Marxism, communism sounds like a good idea because it sounds lofty in terms of its moral attributes, but it doesn't work. And so it fails every time it's tried. And we keep trying to make it succeed, but we can't figure out how. When I say we, I'm talking about humans, not us. They don't believe in it, but humans. So as human beings, we keep trying to make it work, and it is being tried in many places, failing miserably every place it's tried, but we keep trying to make it work. And why do we do that? That's something that is concerned me recently. I've done some further thinking about it and further research. So we'll discuss that in the weeks ahead. We'll discuss this whole notion behind where the motivating factors behind socialism and communism and why it seems to be attractive to a certain group of people. And as we do that, then we'll maybe try to understand why it's still being tried and not rejected by almost all humans that occupy the planet, certainly in future generations. All right, so that's the tragedy of Venezuela. It is disturbing, to say the least, but I guess we needed to talk about that because we need to consider what is it about socialism that is unworkable. And of course, why do people still believe in it? Why is it a predominantly positive message being put forth by most of the universities in this country? Why are they still promoting this idea, which is a failed idea? Why are they still promoting it? Great question. And so we'll try to investigate that as we go forward in the weeks ahead. All right, that completes part two of this week. Part two is our storyboard. And now let's press on to part three. And welcome back to part three of Throttle Up for this week. Part three is our radio essay. And this week I wanted to talk about The new discipline, as I call it, is, in fact, complex problem solving. And as you recall, and I've mentioned this a number of times, in the Future of Jobs report published by the World Economic Forum, critical thinking and complex problem solving is, in fact, the most sought-after set of skills in the global job market, and also the most difficult to fill. And the reason for that is the subject of many of our discussions and will be the subject of many future discussions as we go forward. The reason why critical thinking and complex problem solving in the global job market, particularly in modern industrial societies, the reason for all of that we will be discussing, hopefully in a meaningful way, hopefully to give you some idea of how you can use that and how you can enrich your lives, how you can make your lives better, how you can make your life, economic success of your business or the organization that you belong in, how you can succeed in this complex world of ours. All right, now here is, I'm going to kick off this discussion this week with an article again appearing in the Wall Street Journal recently. And the title of the article, it's in their business and finance section last weekend. The title is Software Flaw Trips Fiat Chrysler. Automaker recalls 5.3 million vehicles for potential problems with cruise control. Article starts as follows. Fiat Chrysler said Friday it is recalling more than 5 million vehicles in the U.S. and Canada to fix a programming flaw that could prevent drivers from canceling the cruise control to slow their cars in an example of glitch-prone software. Not exactly what that means. Not exactly sure what that means. Glitch-prone software. I'm not sure. This in fact, problem was taking over critical safety functions. The automaker said drivers could lose control of vehicle speed in an unlikely series of events involving a short circuit in the electrical network. In such a case, the vehicle could maintain a set speed even if the brakes are tapped or a driver attempts to turn off the cruise control function. In other words, you can't turn it off in certain circumstances and events or occurrences. You actually cannot turn off the cruise control. Now, that's a pretty serious systems error. It goes on to say that the recall is the largest by Fiat Chrysler since the airbag-related announcement 2 years ago, which affected 4.3 million of its vehicles, and is the largest in a series of retroactive product fixes by the automaker, some prompted by deficient software. Okay, so when we talk about problems or we talk about complex problem solving, this is exactly what I'm referring to. And let's assume for the moment that we are part of this organization, either directly or indirectly, and the organization has this problem, and we have been brought in to examine the problem and to come up with not only short-term fixes, but long-term solutions to this growing problem that we're having with these complex systems, these software-intensive systems that have demonstrated their ability to fail in unpredictable ways. And so, armed with our ability to understand and solve complex problems, we are now going to intervene into this arena and see if we can come up with not only fixes, short-term fixes, but also we can come up with some long-term solutions to this growing difficulty that not only this company, but many companies are in fact having with their, we could say high technology systems, with their complex systems, if you like that term. And I just came across this rather fascinating book, and I'm going to be talking more about it. The title of the book is Meltdown, and it really addresses itself to the fact that more and more of these high-tech complex systems are failing in unpredictable ways. Nobody really understands them. Nobody can figure out why. And so we grapple with the short-term fixes instead of coming up with some long-term solutions. And I guess that's the reason why critical thinking and complex problem solving now is the most sought after skill, because more and more companies want their people, if you will, want their employees, their suppliers, whatever, their associates, their affiliates, want to be able to solve these problems quickly and efficiently and get on with the business of selling viable products and not waste time, money, and enormous resources on putting out these brush fires or these raging fires. Now, the article continues. So they're talking about the move comes as the auto industry is increasingly relying on software for critical vehicle functions, okay? They're not the only ones, which is putting more drivers and passengers at risk from distractions or worse as bugs crop up while vehicles are in operation. Fiat Chrysler said the errant cruise control can be overpowered by continuous applications of the brakes or by shifting into neutral and bringing the vehicle to a halt. The company said it is not aware of any accidents or injuries from the flaw, but did find one driver of a 2017 Dodge Journey crossover who experienced it. All right, so it has been experienced by drivers. So the article goes on to talk about some of the things that the company is doing and why this might be happening. But the difficulty is that whatever this system that they have that is called cruise control, it automatically assumes control of the throttle of the vehicle. So it's cruise control. In aviation, we call it auto throttle. It's basically the same thing. You set a speed and the vehicle automatically or autonomously maintains that particular speed until the operator intervenes with a speed adjustment or with a disconnect. In this particular case, the operator could not intervene in a disconnect because the automatic system would not allow the human operator to disconnect it. Okay, so here we are. We are now faced with an actual complex problem. And we talked about complex problem solving, and we discussed that in previous shows. Here is an actual case of a complex problem. Now, how are we going to solve it? You can say, well, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to audit the software. We're going to find out where this flaw is within the code, within the language, and we're going to fix it. Okay, that's a short-term fix. Is that it? Is that all we're going to do? And you can say, well, that's all we can do because of the cost and the urgency and whatever. And I would say that from my perspective, that's not adequate. That is not an adequate way to address the problem. We can address it from a short-term perspective. We can also see if we can solve it at a much higher level. So what's a long-term solution, not just to this problem, but this category of problems? And what's emerging out there? And the thing that I want to discuss, not only today, but continue to discuss in future shows, is the fact that many, many problems that we encounter are not necessarily unique occurrences. Many problems that we encounter, particularly complex problems, all have similar or identical characteristics about them. And so a general set of disciplines that address itself to solving complex problems can be identified. And that's the whole point here. We need to look at it from a broader perspective and say, okay, how do we solve complex problems in general? And what kind of expertise is necessary for us? What kind of organizations will say, what kind of a hybrid team do we need to put together to solve complex problems? Now, as we go through this article, we could begin to see something emerge, which is that there are long-term ramifications of this. For example, advocates of self-driving technology, they say their robotic cars will save more lives, but they're not addressing these software failures, this undetectable software failures that occurs once the vehicle is past the testing stage and once the vehicle or the system is implemented operationally. Now, in the case of this particular event, this is really instructive here. In the case of the Dodge Journey, the driver, the cruise control, wouldn't disengage after being set at 70 miles per hour. The driver was forced to pull off the side of the road using the brake pedal to overpower the engine, which was fighting the brakes. All right, so the driver was able to safely exit the freeway and eventually stop the car. But of course, in other circumstances, he may not have been able to do so, and it may have resulted in an accident, catastrophic collision, and so forth. All right, so what do we make of this? And how do we, let's say we're part of this team that's been brought in. What's a long-term solution? Long-term solution, and I'm going to give you specifics, and from my perspective, you can come up with your own. Long-term solution is a serious design error, which is in not only in aviation, but in other critical fields, we call it the dead man switch, right? In other words, there is a switch in the cockpit of modern airliners that we call the dead man switch. It's a switch that actually, when everything else fails, it's a switch that will disconnect all automatic systems. If something runs haywire or something needs to be completely eliminated or removed from the system, we have that capability. And so the lack of a what we call the dead man switch, or it could be called other things, the lack of the override, the ultimate override of an automatic system. That switch was not installed because the system architecture didn't allow for it or didn't permit that from being installed. So it wasn't a software glitch or a software flaw. It had nothing to do with software. It had to do with the architecture of the system. So the system architecture wasn't designed properly, and the ultimate or long-term fix is to construct or conceptualize different kinds of architecture for the system. So the architecture, system, and method by which we implement these high-tech functions needs to be seriously considered. And so the architectural design of a system is extremely important. And I think most organizations, they neglect that, and they don't really pay much attention to it. All right, I can see by the clock on the wall that we are about ready to close off another episode of Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.